Hey, welcome to First Ascent Podcast, a conversation about climbing. I'm Jay.
I'm Lee. You might think we'd have this dialed by now, but we're always refining the beta.
I think that's what keeps it exciting for me, because each episode still feels like a go-for-broke on-site attempt.
Join us regularly to see if we send it.
Welcome to another episode of First Ascent Podcast.
Really nailing it this time. I love it. How's it going, Jay?
It's going well. How are you, Lee?
Doing pretty well. Sounds like we could use a podcast just from our preamble that we just had off the air. Sounds like we could use a good, a little hang sesh here.
Well, what you wouldn't know if you're a listener of this podcast is that Lee and I are actually friends in real life.
It has been said.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. So when we haven't seen each other for a while, like you catch up with friends.
Yeah. So, I mean, all smart ass jokes aside, like that's actually one of my favorite things about this podcast is like you're kind of the only friend I have that we have scheduled hangout time once a week for at least an hour, you know?
I love this because we're trying to monetize our friendship. If I could monetize every one of my friendships, that would be great. Speaking of monetizing our friendships, we have a Patreon that you can sign up for $5, $7, or $10 a month. I was going to say an hour. No, a month.
Yeah, if we can up that to an hour, that would be great. And what do we get for joining this Patreon, Jay?
You get so much more content. I was just looking at our Patreon. There are like 50 additional episodes on Patreon. It's like kind of crazy. Like,
I could get that, like at the beginning when we had just a couple of things up, I could get people who are kind of like, let's wait. But like, yeah, if you like listen to the podcast, like there's a lot there now. Like it's built up.
It's a little more raw. It's a little more authentic. It's not heavily curated like this one. And for the $10 a month, I almost said an hour again, a month. $10 a month, you get to be on our Discord channel, which is a good conversation. We were just talking about different kinds of lower offs that we like, how everybody feels about pigtails / ram's horns, lower offs versus mussy hooks. I did a little poll on there.
New bolts at Pawtuckawe.
Long overdue.
They are long overdue. For anybody who has been climbing at Pawtuckawe for a number of years, I mean, like watching the erosion happen in real time has been a little disturbing. And so, yeah, now the bolts will help reduce some of that erosion. So we're chatting about that.
At least on our Discord, people prefer mussies over pigtails, but not by much.
I think what it is that mussies are essentially a ghetto carabiner, right?
Yeah.
So like people like clipping carabiners. So if the mussie's closer to a carabiner than the pigtail.
Why do we have to add class into it? Why is it a ghetto?
fine, Jay. Make it a thing. Make it a thing. Here we go.
The mussy has the most metal at the spot where the rope is running over of any option. There's like an inch of metal.
True.
So that's why I like them. And they're substantial. They're easy to clip. That's why I like them better than pigtails.
We noticed that many of you guys had yet to get around. No, you were saving the most recent episode where we talked about bolt replacement.
Not the most, Laura, not the most recent, because we've got another one in between.
Ah, dang. So yeah. How do we salvage this now? No.
It's
one of our recent episodes about bolt replacement didn't get the amount of listenership we were expecting, because I think you guys were waiting for this really exciting episode. And so we decided we were going to give you a little bit more talk about anchors this time around.
We're going to change it to the Top Rope Anchor Podcast.
Yeah.
Where we do is talk about clipping top anchors.
Okay. We're going off down a road we don't need to explore here. So,
well, one thing before we move on, there was, we were talking at the crag the other day at Killer Cave, and a lot of the roots are very pumpy, and clipping the anchors is not easy. They were put up in the 90s where you kind of ended at a jug at the top of the cliff, or almost the top of the cliff. You didn't automatically top out the cliff. So there are like the main roots end at a jug, but there's still cliff above you. There are extensions now. But so like clipping the anchors is one of the cruxes, because at that point you're super pumped.
You're pumped. Yeah.
And it's hanging, like chains hanging above you. So you're like on a jug, like reaching up to clip chains. And we were joking that like on like, I don't know, like the most busy weekend possible, just go up there and put like pigtails on the anchor that's super hard to clip as like a April Fool's joke or something.
Yeah, that would be fun. Speaking of how well you know about the pump factor in that cave, you just sent a hard one over there.
Well, thanks. It wasn't hard by number standards. Like it's a 12C, which, you know, 12C is hard, but it's not, you know, there's
it's not the
lot
highest
harder.
Number. Yeah, you can climb a full number grade more than that. But this is actually why I brought it up, was because I wanted to get into quick, you know, brief discussion about like what it takes to climb 12C in the Killer Cave.
I mean, for me, it took five goes. It's very pumpy, very endurancey. And so you're spending a lot of time on the route, just resting or doing the moves or shaking or whatever. Two thirds of it is like pumpy pocket pulling. And then you pull a roof and then it's jugs to the top. And the roof is like not hard by itself, but after, you know, however many feet of pumpy climbing, it's pretty hard. So like prior to the roof, like I'm climbing, I'm just like, okay, no attachments, Jay, like Zen, you know, the Zen episode, like just, I'm not attached to this. If I do it this time, it's fine. If not, it's fine too. Like I'm just enjoying the movement. And then, so like good mindset, super calm. And then like, I get to the roof, I pull the roof, which is not easy. And as soon as I got up, like over the roof to like the final three bolts of like juggy climbing, like that, like peaceful Zen was completely gone. Yeah.
This is happening.
This has to happen. I was like Howard Rourke in The Fountainhead. All that matters is the destination, not the journey. Like I have to do this route right now.
Oh man.
Thankfully it worked, because falling, I have a friend who fell clipping the anchors. Like he was pulling up rope to clip the anchors and fell and didn't actually clip the beaner and didn't count. So like, but thankfully,
it's such a fun, like sort of arbitrary thing that we do, where it's like you climbed the route, but like the last move is to put the thing in the thing, you know?
Yep.
You gotta like, if you don't do that, you didn't do it. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it was a great experience. I always sort of built that route up in my mind as like just a king line and like the main route in the Killer Cave. Like that's what gives the Killer Cave its name, and it's
killer.
It's known to be like wildly sandbagged. And
now, is that one of the ones that that now has like a ladder leading up to the start?
It's always had a ladder leading up to the start.
It had a rope. Yeah. No, but had a rope ladder, and now it has an actual like Via Ferrata rungs. Yeah.
Correct. Which is actually far less visual impact.
It looks so much classier. And I remember going by there and seeing this like kind of nappy, like, you know, hanging bunch of tat. Like you're like, oh, this is a classic. And I'm like, are you freaking serious? Like you have to climb this rope ladder. And then I came by again a year or two later and I looked and I was like, oh, they replaced it with these rungs. And I was like, now that looks good. Like, yeah.
Well, and the bottom 8 to 10 feet of the cave is way undercut and way wet and like just really nasty. So the good rock starts at 10 feet, 8 feet. So that's why it was that way.
It wasn't worth drilling pockets to get you to the beginning.
No comment.
No, I wanted to give you a chance to spray on that, because that was pretty cool. Sounded like a big breakthrough for you, which is awesome.
Which is funny, because I climbed the 12D to the right of it, Cartoon Graveyard, like the week before, and Killer, the 12C, felt like such a bigger accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, I'm psyched you've been sending stuff. As you and our listeners know, I've been in the process on the hardest thing I've ever really put time into. And I've completely lost count of the number of days I've put in, which is, I could look it up, but like, it's new for me to just like not be keeping score and not be like monitoring such things. And I really enjoyed it. However, I think I have to admit now that I have some minor injuries and I shouldn't be on my project. So the one that like got me to start thinking about pumping the brakes a little bit was some soreness in my middle finger. That's the hand that has to crimp a tiny little edge to do the dyno move at the crux. And then, you know, as I was kind of like considering pushing my luck, the universe or whatever you want to call it, sent one more subtle hint my way that I should be chilling out. And that was, I cracked a rib while doing some maintenance work on an anchor at Remney. I was operating some bolt cutters, and I had to, well, I thought I had to throw my body weight into them to get the bolt cutters to go through. And I jammed my chest against the handle of the bolt cutter, and ouch. And, it's a week out now, and it's still, let's just say I'm not a big fan of sneezing right now.
I didn't know you you said you hurt your chest. I didn't know you fully cracked a rib. That's pretty intense.
I haven't been in to have it looked at. I will say maybe a bad bruise or a crack or whatever, but yeah, it is, it's not like, yeah, give it a day or two. It's like, it got worse for the first 3 days. And I think it's starting to get a little bit better, but it's just kind of funny because whenever I get out of the mindset of just going with the flow, I'm like, all right, well, and I was still very positive on the project, but like, I was like, all right, well, it seems like I have March to get this done. And because, you know, temps are going to be rising, the Peregrines could shut down Main Cliff that we haven't found out yet. But I was like, all right, so I'm going to really apply to this for March, and then I'll feel like one way or the other, I'll feel good about the effort I've put in. And then like, there's always some kind of a stick in the spokes, you know, whenever I try to sort of make the rules, you know, it's like, I just have to just sort of go with the flow. And that's what I did all winter, was just kind of follow my heart, kind of feel it out. I guess I'm like at a point now where I'm having to sort of think about, okay, well, if I can't get on it again for a while, how do I feel about it? And I mean, honestly, like I took over the course of the winter, I took a route that I really wasn't sure was possible and ended up one hanging it. And, you know, I did the hard first half of it 4 or 5 times over the past month or two. And I was just like, all right, I can't really call that a loss. I mean, like it's going well for a hard project.
Francis would say that you shouldn't be attached to it. Like that's another attachment that you're laboring under, that you should be following your heart, enjoying the process, going out and just, you know, loving life rather than putting pressure on yourself to do something.
Yeah. Which is exactly where I've been, and where, I mean, just like with meditation, right? It's not that the thoughts don't come in, it's that you can let go of them. And so these are just sort of some thoughts that are passing through
I'm like berating you for your thoughts. I'm saying those are wrong.
Sorry, I missed that. Yeah, I thought you were being supportive. Okay.
No, I'm judging your thoughts because you won't do that yourself. Somebody has
okay,
to
gotcha.
Do it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm basically like finding my peace with where it's at. I'm sorry that I'm not doing so as successfully as you'd like.
I mean, we're not getting any younger, Lee. Like it's there's a reason why hard sport climbing is a young person's sport. There's a reason for that. And our bodies are not as resilient as they used to be. On the start move of Cartoon Graveyard, I do really high heel hook and then I rock onto it and then I put all my weight on it. And I had that move dialed, completely dialed. And I don't know, did I do it too many times? I must have done it like one or too many times. And all of a sudden, like my knee started hurting on that move. And here's a move that I had just completely locked down, like 100% confidence in it. And then I just did it too many times. And then my knee starts hurting. And now I probably shouldn't do that move anymore so I don't blow out my knee.
Yeah.
Or at least let it really heal before I do it. So it's like, this is why we can't have nice things, because we're getting older.
Yeah. At the same time, that's one of those things I try not to let into my conscious too firmly, is like the people that you see doing well into older age aren't the people being like, oh, well, we're old, shit's falling apart, fuck it. You know, it's like, you got to kind of just be like, no, we've got this. Like, honestly, I've felt better this year than I have, or for the past year, than I have most of my life. I feel like fitter and climbing well. And I don't know. I think that, let's put it this way. It wasn't like I wasn't getting injured in my 20s. Like,
yeah, no, that's true.
I was injured constantly in my 20s.
You've always had finger issues.
yeah, finger issues. And I've always been kind of a nut. So like, you know, this isn't only my fourth time messing up my ribs this bad. Like I've got experience with this shit. Yeah. So it's not like it was smooth sailing when I was younger. I've definitely paid my dues.
I cracked my rib on the first pitch of the Steck South in Yosemite.
Wow. Pitch one, huh?
Pitch one of like a 17 pitch route. I didn't really know how to climb chimneys when I started Steck South, but by the end I did. And the first pitch I was flailing and there's a chalk stone that sticks out and you have to pass the chalk stone. And I like got up under the chalk stone and then just like belly flopped onto it.
And dude, I've done exactly this.
Yeah, it had a point on it and the point went in my rib and my rib just went clunk.
Oh.
It was an audible sound.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's not going to be good. So, but I kept climbing, finished the pitch. And my partner, Matt, was like, should we keep going? I'm like, I guess. So we did the whole route.
No shit. A whole day of off with thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
But like, because I kept moving, I think. And I like, there was the adrenaline and everything. Like, I mean, I felt it, but it wasn't debilitating. Yeah. And then we epicked on the descent and it took forever. And then like the next day, I like could not move. Absolutely could not move.
That sounds a lot like what happened to me this time. It's like when I did it, I went out and then I was like, I was poking it. All right, it feels fine. And then the next day it was like, no, you definitely fucked something up.
Yeah.
But I did that same thing with the belly flop move on. I don't know if you've looked at it. It's a fairly insignificant crack. But say if you're like hiking into the aeration ledge, like to go over to do pine tree or aeration or something, before you get there, there's an angling crack. You're kind of up on the hill right there that has this notable chalk stone that looks really sharp there. And I was going for an onsite on that. And I just, you know, I just am too dumb to let go sometimes. So I was like laying over that sharp thing, like kind of groveling. And all of a sudden I heard,
you did the same thing.
Same thing. Wow. Audible. Yeah. An audible crack. And then that was supposed to be my warm up to lead Peanut Gallery Flake. So I then came down, went back up and sent the route. Then went over, wrapped into Peanut Gallery, and did that with a couple of cracked ribs, I think. And then
next day.
Well, no, it would hurt the whole time. Like, it was definitely not the same situation then. It was like, I just was like, I came here to do this. I'm ready to go. Let's do it. So,
ribs be damned.
That's how cool we are. All right. So, we have again squandered your podcasting time here, valued listeners.
That's on brand for us. Our listeners are like, do I have an hour to just waste? Time to log into First Ascent podcast.
Yeah. So the way we're going to waste some more of your time here is we did a little thing on Instagram that we're calling customer comment box. So rather than like, sometimes we're like, we'll answer your questions. This is like leaving it open as far as like, you know, I said, give us your questions, comments, criticisms, and concerns.
I think we should have had it like The Office when Michael Scott said, this is the compliment box.
Yes.
This is where you can leave compliments.
Yeah, we should have done that. We'll have to do that in the future. Yeah, I don't know that anybody decided to compliment us in this whole thing. We've got, you know, a good number of things. I don't know if we got any. Like, this is very telling, okay? So the first one we got was, will you be doing a third Wife Cast episode?
Oh. Which, yes,
was great. But note that the first comment was about wanting to hear somebody else.
When will you guys hand the reins over to your better halves?
Better halves. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of fun. But anyway, we hope so. Right. One thing about both of our wives, they are strong-willed women, you know? And so they will do it when they see fit.
And they're busy.
Yeah.
We have so much free time compared to our wives.
I hope they don't listen to this and find out that we have so much free time.
Yeah. We're the trophy husbands.
We are. Absolutely. Yeah. That's finally achieved my life goal. And I have a what do you call those? A sugar mama. There you go.
There you go.
Sugar mama.
Yeah.
Wow. What is the square root of 1,024? Jay, do you have a calculator over there?
Yeah. Hold, please.
Yeah.
1024 square root.
Yeah. 1024. There you go.
Do you want the square root or the cube root?
Let's go with the square this time.
32.
32. All right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is riveting listening here.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Is there anything else you guys want us to Google? Oh, man. All right. This is somebody telling us, and I'm not going to say who, but like a good number of these came from the same person, and I liked them. So we're going to include them all.
I think we both know who these are from.
Yeah. No more chatting about winter climbing at Rumney. I think what he means is like, hey, knock it off. Stop telling everybody that climbing at Rumney in the winter is a thing. Luckily, very few have taken the bait. That's totally true.
Wait, that was just an inherent contradiction. He contradicted himself.
Yes. English him. Let's go.
Don't talk about winter climbing at Rumney. Thankfully, nobody's listening to you talk about winter climbing at Rumney.
Yes. There you go. Yeah. Here's the thing. We've been spraying about winter climbing at Rumney since long before this podcast happened. And I mean, on a really nice, like perfect sunny 30 degree day, sure, we can gather a crowd, especially on a weekend. But like, really?
That's not winter climbing.
I was going to say, it's not as comfortable as people wish it was. And therefore, I don't think many people go back over and over. Like, not too many weekly visitors. You know, the screaming pukies, you get it. If you get that on your first time out, you might be like, these guys are full of shit. And so that's fine.
Yeah, we could call it the Rifle Maya test. Do you go twice?
Yes, exactly.
A lot of people will go once.
Yeah.
But if you return, that's sort of a validation of the pursuit. And we're not getting a lot of return winter climbers. And I would add that like a sunny day in the winter that's like 40, that's not really winter climbing. That just happens to be an anomalous spring day.
Yeah.
And I think true winter climbing is when you're climbing out there and it's 15 and it's sunny, you know?
But I think we can get from context. He means just the calendar year. If we're telling people to go out there in, you know, in January.
Well, are we defining it as calendar winter or meteorological winter?
Oh, this is.
Because these are different things.
And this is what you asked for with this question. Here we go. No,
I mean, calendar winter ended March 21st, right? That was the first day of spring. But I think you would agree that winter persists.
Winter is persistent, yes. We've got, they got like almost 2 feet of snow up where you live?
Yep.
I mean, not where you are now, but.
Yeah, no, I'm smart. Yeah. You know what? I'm not going to stop talking about things I'm psyched about, commenter. Like, yeah. I'm psyched about and happy about climbing in the winter, and it's fun. Like, I'm not going to lie. I think we have a responsibility to be truthful and honest and authentic here. And we're not going to say that climbing in the winter at Rumney is bad. It can be really good. I'm also not going to say that dry tooling is fun because it generally isn't.
And we came here to spray, and apparently you keep tuning in. So I think we're going to keep doing what we do. How about a show with Rajiv from China Beach Podcast? This is something that we've been talking about, and apparently he's going to be back in the area. So hopefully we'll get an episode with him. Also, he said maybe a chat with Nina Williams, which I've been meaning to drop her a line and just kind of see if she'd be interested, because it would be cool to maybe have Rajiv and Nina on, since that would be like a big China Beach, you know, deep episode.
Yeah, we've been talking about having our related podcast doing a crossover episode, and I think that would be really great.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of like following through and doing it and scheduling and all of that. Like, you may have noticed that like we're not good at follow through.
Yeah. You guys may have noticed that we can pretty much write our own, you know, write a blank check around here for who we want on. Like somebody like anyone. Nina Williams, like, you know, big name climbers. Like, they're just, let's just say our mailboxes are full to bursting with requests from them to come on the pod.
Yeah, around the First Ascent office, all of the interns are constantly fielding requests. And, you know, take a number is what we say.
Yeah, basically. So we'll see what we can do. We'll see what you can do. And again, you know, anything we can do to drown out the Lee and Jay voices, you know, that's what we're trying to deliver for you guys. How did you guys come up with the idea to do a podcast? And when did you become buddies?
The buddies question, I'm going to deal with that first. And I'm still waiting for that to happen. Friends, yes. Buddies, no.
Yeah. I think that is something. It's a project. We're working that project, you know?
And to be honest, it's not looking good. We're going bolt to bolt.
It's hard to decide who's more resistant.
We've been friends since 2002.
Yes.
That's when I met you when I moved to New Hampshire. I met you at EMS. That's how long we've been friends.
Guys, we just agreed on something. It was
an
awesome.
EMS that's no longer there.
Yeah, EMS is no longer there. It was very interesting. Jay drove by and saw that the windows were boarded up, the door was boarded up, and he reached out to me like, "Yo, like, did you see? Like, EMS is gone." And I had known that was coming, and I hadn't mentioned it. But yeah,
it's sad.
It's the end of an era, you know.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. And I mean, we both moved on like a long time ago, but I don't know. I always had fond memories of being at Store 501 and, you know,
CJ, right? CJ was always fun.
Stan.
Now, that was when Mary was the manager there. And CJ was the assistant. Yeah. Yeah. Stan, Fred. You remember Fred?
I remember Fred.
Fred was still there, like, I think till the end. Like,
was he?
He was the longest running part-time EMS employee I've ever heard of. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And there's so many other people who came through there, and it was just such a great, for me, just moving to Concord from Wisconsin, it was such a great entree into the outdoor community, you know, and made so many connections and friendships. And
it was a great entree, even though Concord was just your appetizer.
Oh, yeah. See what you did there.
Yeah, it was a cool era. And it was cool getting to meet you. And actually another Lee Peterson.
Yep.
He was one of the other climbers there. Cool.
How did we start the pod?
Yeah, I guess like a lot of this is covered in our first episode, which I'm sure many of you guys listen to, you know, bi-weekly. But yeah, as far as how do we get the idea for the pod? I mean, we figured, man, we just can't stop talking when we're hanging out together. I bet everybody in the world would like to hear this.
Everybody should hear this amazing conversation that we're having.
Right.
And I think it's an extension of what we did on Mountain Project, really establishing Mountain Project and just continuing the dialogue that you and I have been having for 20 years and, you know, with various members of the community. I think this is just a natural extension of that. And it's been great. I mean, we're almost 2 years in and, you know, we're
88 episodes or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't feel like we're running out of things to talk about.
I don't either. And I think that you couldn't talk about how we came to make a podcast without talking about Mountain Project. It all kind of revolves around our banter over Mountain Project. I think that, like, you know, you and I got along well at EMS. We got along well at the Crag, but we started really bantering through Mountain Project, which then expanded out to our Crag banter. And and much like people
and the development and exploration. Yeah. And then
that gave us more subject to talk about was the development and all that.
And in a lot of ways, the media landscape has changed since the time when we first started talking. I mean, the internet was the thing, and you posted on the internet, you posted on blogs, and, you know, it's kind of before social media.
Yeah.
Now podcasts are so ubiquitous that this is where the media is heading. And I think we're sort of following that wave and having this continual conversation with climbers, with people in the community. It's just such a great thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. No regrets. Psyched to be here.
No regrets.
No egrets. screw those things.
Yeah.
It's a little bird humor for those guys who don't know it. Anyway, this is one that we want to talk about, right? It's a two-parter.
Cool.
What is the timeline for the new Romney guidebook, and is the Russell guidebook shelved? So I'm going to answer the first part. I don't know. I'm working on the guidebook for Romney with Ward and the crew that's been putting it out for years. We are trying to re-engineer it and make it more than what it's been in the past, which is great, just adding some features. And so it's more than just adding a few new routes and drawing a few new lines and then calling it good. So all I can say is that we are well into the process, and I'll, you know, get an estimated date when that will be out as soon as I can. You know where you're going to hear the spray about it. It's right here. As far as the, quote, Russell guidebook, Jay, do you want to take point on starting that answer?
Yeah, we were pretty close to press on that. And then the access issues became
more,
very aware
more
to
issue-y.
Us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we paused it for that reason. We are in a far better place access-wise than we were a year ago, 2 years ago. And it's looking like it's moving in a good direction. So Lee and I have had a lot of short conversations about restarting the book. We're joking that we'll start with the second edition because we had the first edition ready to go, like ready for layout, basically.
Yeah, it was at the publishers.
Like all we had to do is, I mean, layout's not a small thing, but all we had to do was layout and then have it printed and it would have been done. But we're going to start with the second edition. When that comes out, it has everything to do with the access piece because we want it to be a positive for the community, not a negative.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing I had notably put the quote Russell guidebook out there because it is more for what we call the central triangle of New Hampshire climbing. And so just, I know people are psyched about the Russell side of the book, but honestly, the coolest thing about the book is that people will buy it for Russell and find so much more.
Yeah, right. Come for Russell, stay for the greater Waterville Woodstock region.
Yeah, we both believe, and this is why we put so much work into the area as well as the working on the book. We really believe that this is a region of climbing that has not even begun to have its story written. So it's going to be amazing.
And I think in terms of actual like content in the book, I mean, Russell Merriam would be half, and then the other half would be everything else. And there's so much elsewhere. And then the other thing is in the time that we press pause in the book, there have been so many new cliffs, so many new routes added. So
yeah,
we have to stay up to speed with that. Like with every sort of when is the guidebook coming out discussion, it's all so subjective and speculative and, you know, plus or minus 1 year on each one, because it's a labor of love is one thing. Is like no guidebook author in the history of guidebook authors has gotten rich on a guidebook. Yeah. And, you know, guidebook authors do this because they love the area. They want to share the area. They care about the information in the area and making it accurate. And, you know, I'm not one to say this normally, but like having written a guidebook, like cut us some slack.
Yeah. I was just going to say it's very eye-opening to be, you know, in the process, and it makes you a little bit less judgmental of the fact that the timelines on guidebooks are always a little janky. So it'll happen. Don't you worry about it. But, you know, we haven't forgotten about it for sure. Oh, this is something here. I've got a one-word answer for this one. Maybe give it a rest for a while on the whole gates in, gates out debate. Here's my one-word answer. No.
Spoken like a true gates outer.
Yeah, Jay's perfectly happy to give it a rest once everybody agrees that gates in is the proper way to be. Oh, man. Here's one. I don't know if you'll know the answer to this one, but I mean, if I looked in my notes, I could give a real answer. How many days did you each climb outside in 2023? And what is your personal record for number of days? Do you have any estimates on these things?
I don't know. I don't keep a log like you do. I don't know. 200, 150, 200, something like that.
Logging such things can be it can create a tough relationship with climbing. And it's another one of those things that might take some people out of that Zen mindset that I'm doing this for the love of it mindset. When you can see the data, it can color your experience. Now, I keep track, anal retentive notes of everything I do, but I don't set much stock in it, right? So I'm not like going back and I'm not fixating on it. I do at the end of the year get curious, oh, well, what did I do this year? So I do know, I think 150 something days this past year, 2023. And the highest I've recorded, which must be my highest, was like 175. So
It's like half of the days.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like what you were talking about, Jay, with your guests sounds pretty close to me because like we climb similar amounts. So somewhere between 150 and 200.
One thing I like that I kind of get in the mode of sometimes is that it's kind of a lifestyle thing where I find myself at the crag when the weather is good or workable more days than not. I might not be climbing every day at the crag, but I'll be like scoping something or, you know, hanging out with friends or belaying Kate on her project when I might not even be climbing. Like I like when I get in the mode of just like getting my work done and going to the crag.
Yeah, totally.
It's, you know, days I'm climbing or like working a project might be like 20% of those days, but like every day I'm at the crag. I love that. And it reminds me of, I spent a couple summers in Yosemite and you're just always around climbing.
Yeah. You're existing in it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe you're bouldering while you're cooking dinner, or maybe you weren't going to climb, but your friends are out at Swan Slab and you just happen to like,
and you go, yeah, go play around,
take a lap or something, yep. You know, and not every day is like climbing, you know, Steksalathe or like climbing El Cap.
Yeah. Well, that's like, I'll on my lunch break, run over to Rock Rim and solo a couple of easy routes and then go back, you know, like that's something I'll do. And I think that if I start looking at that as a tick in a box, it gets a little dangerous, right? I shouldn't be out there doing that kind of stuff to try to meet some record or, you know, something like that. And so, I like the idea of just having it be part of the lifestyle. I think, you know, where you're an actual local up north and I'm a pseudo local because I'm from far away, I think like that lends itself to your arrangement a little bit better. But, you know, I'm trying to make some changes so I can see up there more, you know?
My life is the best when it's that way.
I thought you were just going to stop with my life is the best, because I was like, I mean, fairly accurate.
And when I'm taking care of work, like spending enough time with family and then spending time out at the crags.
The trifecta.
It's the best.
Well, this is a cool one. So kind of asking, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but kind of asking the state of Team Tough in reference to Rumney, like, where's Team Tough? Like, haven't seen them around as much. Like, where are the key players? So I can say pretty confidently that I think Chris Smith is probably the most regular at Rumney still. He lives fairly close by.
Let me just add that I see more of the Team Tough, allegedly Team Tough members at the climbing gym on cold days in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at what point do we need to remove that label?
The toughness?
Because, yeah, yeah. Yes. Team Tough is top roping in the gym because it's too cold to go to Rumney.
Well, Smitty did just a couple of seasons ago put up a new route, a moderate, and he called it Team Cream Puff. So maybe that's maybe that's his new team. But anyway, yeah, Smitty will still be out. I mean, even if Jay's throwing some shade, he'll be out sometimes in the winter, tiptoeing through the snow to do a barefoot ascent of one of the routes at Main Cliff. Ward is closer to some of the crags down in Western Mass in his everyday life, so he's down there a bit. But they did just get a place. Him and his family got a place pretty much right down the street from Rumney, so he's been up at Rumney a little bit more. Dave Quinn is living out in Colorado and doing a bunch of work out there.
And really doing great work with developing glue-in bolts.
Yeah,
his crossover bolt. And yeah, I mean, he's definitely taken the Team Tough mantle and brought it nationwide.
Yeah. And Mark Sprague fell out of climbing for a few reasons during COVID, but we've been trying to get him to come out and play with us sometime. So hopefully we'll see Spraguey back out there sometime soon. But those are the ones that I know of.
I've chatted with Ed Esmond. He's around okay. too. He's still yeah. climbing. Yeah. I mean, is this a good time to talk about Team Scruff?
I mean, if we wanted to steal the thunder here,
let's
yeah.
pivot but now, to I'm, ourselves.
I'm just gonna say
away from them to us.
But this is a point of pride for me. Smitty years ago, I said something about Team Tough and whatever, and he goes, "Well, you're on Team Tough," and I was like, "What? Wait, what? That's not something you just throw away." And he's just like, "No, I mean, like, he's like nobody ever like you know came and hung a medal on our necks and said, "You're now Team Tough." He's like, "You're definitely part of Team Tough. You put up roots. You're out there all winter. You do this." And I was just like, oh my goodness. Anyway.
I mean, what's the saying? I wouldn't want to be a part of a group that would have me as a member.
Yeah.
And I've never been bestowed that title. So we developed Team Scruff, which is such a Gen X thing. Like, okay, so the boomers are going to have Team Tough, right? Like, we're like, fine, you have Team Tough. We'll start Team Scruff.
Yeah.
And then we became Team Scruff.
I think like we just were noticing that the area we were developing was a little scruffier and
it was way scruffier.
And the members seemed a bit scruffier as well.
So. Way scruffier. It's yeah. like accurate, even not in relation to Team Tough.
Yep.
But I love going out with the Team Scruff members and scrapping around the hills and looking for stuff. And we got our own thing going, Lee.
We do. We do have our own thing for sure. Anyway, that's fun. So one person, I think there is actually just one person, wants more bouldering content.
What?
You just don't get it here.
I should boulder more. I was yeah. talking to somebody about at the crag and I was like talking about how the way that you come to climbing, what sport you do before climbing affects the kind of climber you are. We've had this discussion on here before. Totally. And he was a skateboarder and he's super strong and super good at doing hard moves. And I'm like, having been a runner, like it's really hard to access that sort of try hard. And yeah. he's like, "Well, do you boulder?" And I'm like, "I should boulder. I should like, that's the best way to access the try hard is bouldering."
Yeah. And I think like, I mean, being a skateboarder, I was a skateboarder and a climber simultaneously when I was younger. And then skating and that kind of stuff was much more my identity back then. I think I got into bouldering early, like once I met the climbing community and was exposed to people who are actually good at it, like I got into bouldering for a while. And I think that makes sense for that demographic because it's like you're doing tricks, right? Oh, let's try yeah. this trick, you know, yeah, and you fall a lot, then you do the trick and you yeah. go, "Oh, that was cool," and then move on to another thing, right? But I think I've grown into the longer routes more because I've looked at climbing more as a meditation and less as tricks. And so it allows me to stay in that mindset for a longer period of time and sustain that more.
I've done a lot of bouldering development and bouldering exploration, which I've really enjoyed. I just don't think I have, I don't want to be that guy, but I don't think I have what I had before when yeah. I was younger. I think I need some climbing to get my body moving and then yeah. get into the hard moves,
yeah.
you know, like I'm not against doing hard moves, but it's just like constant hard moves. Just, I break down, man.
Yeah. Now I definitely, you just said something that I agree with, which is like, I love developing new boulders. I just don't really yeah. love going and repeating one that's already been done. I think it's because it has that exploration discovery kind of thing. I'll see if you could guess who asked this one. How'd you get the beans above the Frank?
We got a bleeder.
Oh man.
Oh, I think I know who that is and I'm yeah.
Yep. Anyway,
that would be friend of the pod, Jeremy Ballou.
You nailed it. The middle finger guy. Yeah. If you don't know that reference, you can search those keywords on YouTube and I'm sure you'll find your answer.
Oh man, what a good movie. with Brett Favre in it.
Favre. Yeah. Oh man, the scene with the hitchhiker and then the subsequent trip to the police station, that was like my favorite scene ever. Good. All right, I'll give it away. You got to see Something About Mary if you don't know it. Something About Mary is a classic, must see movie.
Definitely not a movie that could be made today.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. So if you're sensitive to things that shouldn't be made today or couldn't be made today, you've been warned. So someone was saying this will get us talking. Revisit the episode about peregrine falcons. Maybe you could invite Chris Martin from the Audubon to join. What do you think, Jay?
Peregrine falcons. Yeah. If they're so endangered, why are they nesting at every cool cliff in New Hampshire? Therefore closing.
I almost didn't even want to entertain this one just because, we have the same talk over and over.
They're not endangered. I know they're what? Persecuted? No, that's
persecuted,
not the right
yes,
word.
They're highly persecuted, right?
They're thriving. Yeah. And one of the consequences of them thriving is that they're closing a lot of cliffs. And you know what? Like, they've got good taste. So they end up, you know, nesting on the coolest, raddest cliffs with the most exposure in New Hampshire. And therefore, they're getting those cliffs closed.
Yeah. So the issue is this, like, and I mean, there's a lot of arguments in both directions that I can entertain. But so if climbers do climb at those cliffs, then those peregrines are likely to not be successful in breeding.
But wasn't the problem DDT?
It has nothing to do with whether we caused the problem. And it has nothing to do with if they're endangered. If there's an animal that I can help be successful in nature, they were there before we were, like, I think I should help. And it has nothing to do with whether they're scarce or not. Like, when there's a raven nest on a root, by the way, there's one on orangahang right now. But anyway, when there's a raven nest on a root, I avoid that too. And ravens are everywhere.
Yeah, but ravens don't close an entire crag. Like, if that was, I know, and peregrines don't have nests. You've told me that many times. Mm-hmm. But if peregrines were nesting on orangahang, it would close all of Orange Crush.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Yeah, you've never had a good point before, but I'll give you that one.
Like, close the root. Like, leave them alone. Close the root. But, like, the extent of the closure is related to the need. I question that.
Yeah. You're great at asking questions. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Jay or myself will be swayed by each other's points on this. So we'll leave that. And if I would say, when it comes to doing another episode on peregrines, I think that, you know, there's not a ton of like widespread desire for such an episode. But I will say that if some new development is happening, like if there's some change or if there's some news about the peregrine situation, then we would definitely have Chris Martin come on and chat about it.
I'd like Chris Martin to come on and also a peregrine.
Yes.
Because I have some questions.
Because you're hungry and you want an omelet. So somebody said, again, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. Forget about gates in, gates out. Let's start the gates left or gates right movement. So what's that? Like, you'd go gates in on one side and gates out on the other.
I love our listeners.
Yeah.
Our listeners are so clever. You know what? I'd love to just do an episode where it's just our listeners talking.
Honestly, they'd probably like that too. Like we said in a recent episode, we are kind of edging toward having an episode where people can come on and tell their climbing stories. You guys just have to send us some stories, and we'll pick some that seem like worthy to be included on an episode with your story.
100%.
This says, unique podcast. What do you guys think about the Fix triple X bolt? It's removable. So the Fix, or as some people call it, Fixie triple X bolt. I think the first thing we need to unpack is unique podcast.
Yeah, was that written by a bot?
That's like saying, oh yeah, I saw such and such movie recently. And they're like, oh, how was it? It was interesting.
I sort of thought, I read it like, nice podcast you got there.
Yeah, totally.
It'd be a shame if something should happen to it.
I don't have any experience with the triplex bolt, the removable one.
Is that the same as the Petzl triplex?
I don't know. Like, I remember seeing a removable bolt that Fix was offering, but I don't know much about it. So I'm sorry that I'm getting more out of your unique podcast comment than I'm able to respond on the actual bolt. We'll have to do some research and we'll report if we find anything interesting.
Well, now that ClimbTech was sold or something changed where now it's not really doing climbing gear, it's mostly doing industrial gear, I think that you can't get the ClimbTech removable bolts.
So we're going to have to figure something out.
Yeah. And the RBs are awesome. I love them as a piece of gear. They're amazing for development, especially when you're using glue-ins, because it allows you to kind of see where the bolts are going before it becomes super permanent when you glue it in.
Yeah.
And if the triplex does the same thing, then I'm all for it. And if it's removable, that sounds great.
Yeah. I just did a quick search and yeah, I'm looking at it. Looks like a sleeve bolt that can then be loosened and removed, which, I mean, if it works, then I'm psyched on it. I will. Hey, how about this? You guys over at Fix with an E on the end, send us a couple of demos and we'll try them out and give it a full review here on the pod.
I don't get how it works.
Yeah. Concepts are tricky for you.
I'm looking at a picture. I see how the Petzl one works because it's got like a plunger.
A little plunger to remove it. Yeah.
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 No, but this one doesn't have that. And it also says on the website discontinued.
Ah, well, there you go.
Which doesn't bode well for its use.
Yeah. Oh man, this next person is just, they're just trying to give Jay some ammo. Would love an episode where y'all had a slideshow of your favorite photos you've taken or been in.
That'd be cool. Yeah. How would we do a slideshow on an episode, like on an audio medium?
I was actually thinking the same thing. I'm like, yeah, I like the idea, but maybe we come out with a series of Instagram posts ahead of time and you can flip the pages along with us, like flipping to the next slide. I mean, this could do two things. It could revolutionize the podcast industry and it could also cause some serious traffic accidents.
I have one picture that I really like of my climbing and you took it actually. It's like my favorite picture of me climbing.
I love
me
that.
On Sword Fighter at Osceola.
Yeah.
Like my hair is magnificent.
I would go with majestic, honestly.
I mean, either one.
Yeah. But no, I'm really glad. I was really glad that you liked that photo. Yeah. It's an interesting angle of a beautiful route. And if y'all haven't heard of this route,
it's mostly the hair.
See, that's the thing I always mess up with on pictures of you is like, I could take a picture of you doing like something that's not very impressive looking. The angles and the composition are kind of simple. As long as the hair looks good, it's good. And I focus on the wrong things. Like sometimes, you know, I'll take a picture I think is rad, you know, composition and everything. And you'll be like, I look bloated. My hair looks horrible. And I was like, you're just so hard to please.
That one you took on of me on prednisone. When I was on prednisone, I was literally on my poison ivy where I was all swole from my steroid.
And this is another reason why that photo should definitely be in the book eventually is you could be Jay on prednisone, right?
Yeah. Jay bloated from prednisone.
Just the comment.
Mostly every picture that's taken of me, I hate. So, you know, that's high praise. Also, the picture you took of me on Simon Bar Sinister last winter, where my hair is like also majestic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
I agree. Yeah. Myself, I mean, this was the ammo part I was talking about. I feel like Jay knows. I mean, any picture of me climbing is my favorite picture ever.
I know. It's crazy.
I will say anytime that Brent Dosher has taken photos of me, like he has a great eye. He's, you know, technically amazing.
If Brent's listening, I'm available.
Yeah, Jay's available to model. Do you make sure that he has a hair and makeup trailer? Because he's going to need some work.
I mean, yeah, I'm not low maintenance.
No one's going to accuse you of that. Yeah, Brent photos. Those are my favorite photos.
Those are also your favorite days.
Absolutely. Yes. That's it. That's the
all right.
That's the story. Bye. No, I'm just kidding.
Those were all the suggestions we got out of the suggestion box. Then that's the, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for the feedback. Keep it coming. We could do this. Periodically. I was thinking, like, when I said bye, it would be funny if someday I just kind of hit the exit button. Like,
yeah. Bye.
Just sort of like, nah, that was what I had to say. Click.
Yeah. Mic drop.
And he's gone. And he's gone. Yeah.
And we're done. Thanks for listening to this episode of First Ascent Podcast. We're really happy that you stopped by. If yeah. you like what you've heard, you can rate and review us. Please rate us 5 stars.
At least 5 stars.
We don't want any lesser ratings. And you can find us on Instagram.
Our Instagram is First Ascent Pod. And we also have our own self-promoting Instagrams. Mine is xxleeweexx.
So extra. Mine's very basic. It's JAYKNOWER.
Real original.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
See you next time.